Seen any good movies lately, huh? If you haven't, you'll hear some recommendations on which ones are good and worth seeing from film critic Judith Crist. That advice less than 3 minutes from now on Monitor. I'm your host, Ted Steele. And here's Sonny James with his new one, A World of Our Own.
Close the door, light the light. We're staying home tonight. Far away from the bustle and the bright city lights. Let them all fade away. Just leave us alone and we'll live in a
Are they better than ever? Maybe not, but they're, well, franker than ever. There are fewer taboos as far as sex, violence, and language are concerned. That's the opinion of film critic Judith Crist, and she was interviewed for Monitor by Betty Grobley in Washington.
Judith, you have been a film critic for how long now?
All my life. How long have I had a job as film critic? It's about 6 years.
Do you think this trend is going to continue?
Up to a point. I think as a hangover, we are going to continue to get movies that concentrate on sex and violence. But I suspect that early on, and sooner than most people think, there is going to be a public reaction to this sort of thing.
Do you think we get what we deserve?
Yes, we also get what we want. It's the same way, you know, that these foul books that are being written all the time are read. In the same way, people do like to see titillating movies.
I'm sure you don't believe in censorship.
No, I'm violently against it.
How do you then think that this will come about?
Well, I think it's going to be in a matter of self-censorship. And this is the only way in which we can get the kind of movies we want. We are getting these movies because they sell. It was only, what, about 8-9 years ago that we first saw really bare shoulders in a bed.
Mm-hmm.
That was in Hiroshima, Mon Amour. And it's startling, isn't it, to think how recent that was. When we saw a man and a woman obviously in bed without clothes on. We certainly didn't see them as explicitly as we have seen them in the ensuing years. It's reached the point where people are embarrassed to be seen walking out of certain movie houses. I think one of the worst American characteristics is that we are perfectly willing to look at a body being riddled with bullets, but we will not look at a beautiful naked body. You know, that's not nice.
Yeah.
This, I must say, television censorship does the same thing. You can see all sorts of violence, but you must not see someone naked in your own home, of all places. You know, this is the censorship of the television set. It's ridiculous.
What should we do, Judith? Should we talk to theater managers if we have seen a film that we don't like? Do you think that ever does any good?
I think it does a great deal of good, and I know in town after town, this has worked remarkably well.
Judith, we hear so much about foreign films. What about American films? We're doing better?
I had great delight this year in making out my list of the 10 best films to find that 7 of them were American.
What are your 10 best?
My 10, just in the order of my own preference for them, is Bonnie and Clyde, Ligeri Fini, The Graduate, In the Heat of the Night, In Cold Blood, Ulysses, The Battle of Algiers, Falstaff, Father, and The President's Analyst, with, I add very quickly, Accident 2 for the Road, Bedazzled, Smashing Time, and The Jokers is very close runners-up.
These are worth the minute.
Right. You know, I need a list of 15. You think it's an awful year, and then you start making a list, and then, you know, the horse trading begins with yourself, because very often it's a comparison of pots and kettles, you know.
Are the pressures exerted on you overtly or inadvertently to...
Well, there were. Very early in my career when I wrote about a movie that was playing at Radio City Music Hall, both the movie company and Radio City Music Hall withdrew their advertising from the Herald Tribune. I was very lucky. I had support from my publishers, my editors, and I think that's the last time anything of the sort ever happened. They came back, by the way.
We've been talking with Judith Crist, and this is Betty Grobley for Monitor.
We'll switch from the topic of motion pictures to still pictures in the centerfold of a magazine for men later this half hour when Al Capp speaks. The Sandpipers sing about misty roses. At 17 minutes past the hour, you're on the Monitor Beacon.
The same, but the game is different. When Fortune Phone premieres on WNBC, January 29th. All day, any day, the new Fortune Phone could ring for you. Listen and learn how you can be a Fortune Phone winner when... WNBC Radio premieres the week of January 29th.
Do you know that over 3 million people have kidney disease right now and don't know it? And do you know there's an artificial kidney machine that can keep people alive indefinitely or until they recover? But not everyone can get the machine because of one little thing. There isn't enough money. That's like a death sentence for a lot of people. Please, please, don't make us decide who shall live and who shall die because there isn't enough money. Give to your local chapter of the National Kidney Foundation or write Box 353, New York, 10016. The Conversation Station, WNBC, New York.
Nationwide, it's NBC.
And it's Monitor with Vicki Carr teaching the lesson.
This is the lesson taught to me a long time ago at my mother's knee. She said, it's finally happened. Now it's my turn to call. Oh, my darling, you've heard me till I feel I could die. But you're saying, forgive me. And I understand. For I am your woman.
Developments in heart transplant surgery have brought up the question of heart banks for the future. There are kidney banks, eye banks, and so forth, but we have a report from Pittsburgh on the first heart bank. Merle Polis reports for Monitor.
Pittsburgh this week became the center of the first known heart bank in the world. The Western Pennsylvania Heart Association has begun to openly seek registrants who will volunteer their heart upon death to another. Dr. Robert G. Pontius, president of the local heart group and himself a leading cardiologist, says the plan is really a very simple one. Anyone will be free to sign a card pledging their heart. One copy of the transaction would be kept at Pittsburgh's University Medical Center, the other on the person. In the event of death that does not affect the stability of the heart per se, medicine would know the person's desires by the registry card. Dr. Pontius used as an example a young man who might pledge his heart. In an untimely automobile accident, he is killed from skull or perhaps other internal injuries not directly connected with a small muscle we call a heart. This donor, says the physician, is clinically perfect. A heart bank is really, say the physicians, a misleading word. The storage under the plan will actually be within the bodies of healthy, living human beings who feel they can sign a pledge card in good faith. Dr. Pontius says everyone in this area will be acceptable for registration, but what hearts are actually usable in the future is difficult to say. He looks toward the hearts of persons under 50 years of age. The local heart association took steps this week to make it clear workable heart transplants on a routine basis might be a quarter of a century away, but if donors do not begin to pledge now, there'll be a shortage in the years to come. So far, one person has actually signed the card that donates a heart to another. She is Mrs. Joseph M. Barr, wife of Pittsburgh's mayor and a vice president of the Western Pennsylvania Heart Association. Doctors hope, however, by the end of 1968, perhaps as many as 200 persons will pledge their hearts for transplants. They say they already have had numerous inquiries. Merle Polis, NBC News, Pittsburgh.
A special report on the first heart bank in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. Here's Andy Williams on monitor with Holly. Monitor's talking cartoonist, Al Kapp, will now open up the subject of the undressed female form and turn to the centerfold spread first.
Way back when a skirt whipped by the wind of the thighs would cause tragedies in traffic, girls who posed in the nude for Playboy were usually overgrown louts from nowhere and the daughters of nobody. Nobody would admit they were, anyhow. Being photographed naked was once the last resort of the girl who had nothing to lose. Today, it's the loftiest ambition of the girl who has everything. The privilege of having one's bottom examined and discussed by Playboy's millions of readers is now reserved for the daughters of brigadier generals and bankers, and in the biographical section of the magazine, the family proudly poses with their honored child, and her eighth grade teacher recalls the early emergence of her talents, sometimes as long as 3 or 4 years earlier. It wasn't so long ago that the revelation that a rising star had fallen so low as to be photographed in the nude would threaten to destroy her career. Remember Marilyn Monroe on the carpet? Today, established stars such as Kim Novak and Susan Strasberg are available in the nude, and that revives interest in their careers. Now, is it all a recognition of the hypocrisy of the girl who wore a bikini on the beach at noon and demurely pulled her skirt over her kneecaps in the evening? Or is there an even simpler explanation, one any department store manager would understand, and that is that in anything as competitive as retailing or romance, only a darn fool neglects to display her most alluring wares. And this is Al Kapp on Monitor.
Al Kapp, who created the miniskirt for Daisy May in his comic strip Little Abner years ago, is heard on Monitor every weekend.
to Candice in the area of Rhinelander, Wisconsin. We're heard on WOBT. Wherever you listen, stay with us. There's more to come. This is Ted Steele for Monitor.
Duke Ellington visits Monitor later this evening on the NBC Radio Network.
It's Monitor. It's 68. Your weekend companion keeps you up to date with news, news and music and comedy on NBC.
Con men and how they operate in 68. That's the subject for discussion just 3 minutes from now. I'm Ted Steele, offering you the best deal on weekend listening. It's Monitor. You've got to admit the price is right. And here's our big two-for-one bargain, the Letterman, with Going Out of My Head and Can't Take My Eyes Off You.
Well, I think I'm going out of my head. Yes, I think I'm going out of my head.
Nobody likes to be conned. How can you avoid it? Well, forewarned is forearmed and all that. So listen to Don Williams, manager of the Better Business Bureau in Worcester, Massachusetts. He was interviewed for Monitor by reporter Ron Probuda.
Don, is there a big problem in this country with con artists trying to gyp the public?
Well, these are problems that occur regularly throughout the entire country. There are always new schemes and stratagems on basic frauds, but somebody has always got the idea of taking advantage of the public if they can separate them from their money.
Mm-hmm. What are the most common types of hoaxes perpetrated upon the public?
Well, I think many times these stem from the idea that you're going to get something for nothing. I think, for example, of the so-called free movie camera outfit, which has been offered widely in many parts of the country during the past year. This starts out with a postcard sent to your home. It says you're gonna win a prize of a free snapshot camera. And when the salesman stops by, he does have a free snapshot camera for you, very inexpensive. But he also has with him a very elaborate movie camera outfit of camera, projector, lights, and screen. And offers this for $600 or $700, together with processing stamps for about 600 rolls of color film. He does not bother to point out the fact that the film works only in his camera and projector, and his camera and projector will not accept any other types. And he also doesn't tell you that 600 rolls of film, at the rate the average family uses movie equipment, would be about 60 years' supply. So when you tie in the processing cost for this film, and you have to pay a processing cost above all this, you're really committing yourself for about $3,000. But none of this has been pointed out at the time the salesman calls. So once again, the customer's answer is to do his shopping ahead of time and find out what the regular retail outlets have to offer. Compare this with what may be offered by a salesman such as this movie camera expert.
Would you recommend that people report incidents like this to the Better Business Bureau?
Well, we're always interested in learning of any new operation of this sort, and if we have information, and many times we already may have information, so that anyone, a member of the public, can call us ahead of time and find out something about what they're being asked to invest in.
Do you work closely with other Better Business Bureau offices around the country?
Yes, we do. There's about 130 in the United States and Canada now, and we communicate with each other. Send news to other bureaus, and also can ask them for special reports and investigations where these are warranted.
Are there any notorious people who the Better Business Bureau is on the alert for?
I think maybe you're referring to our old friends, the Williamson Gang, and they are notorious to all Better Business Bureaus everywhere. The men do driveway paving and roof sealing, various other work of that sort. Their wives, who accompany them on their travels, usually in rather large and expensive cars, offer so-called handmade rugs, linens, and so forth, which they usually picked up from some Oriental import shop. And the driveway sealing that they do is liable to last at least as long as until the first rainstorm. But these people come north in the summertime, and they go south in the wintertime, just like the birds do.
Mm-hmm.
I know that the group that was in Massachusetts last summer, I saw a note from a Mississippi Better Business Bureau recently that they had reached that point in the country for the colder months.
How long have they been in operation now?
Years and years, and it's a family that is so intricately related and married that no one has ever been able to trace the entire family tree, but every Better Business Bureau knows about the Williamson Gang.
Have any of them ever been caught?
Once in a while, they occasionally make court appearances. Usually they post bail, and by the time the bail is, by the time the trial is supposed to be set there someplace else.
It's a good business for them, then, isn't it?
It's obviously very profitable. I wonder how much Uncle Sam ever makes from income tax purposes.
Don, most interesting. Thank you very much for joining us on Monitor.
Thank you.
Our guest today, Mr. Don Williams, manager of the Better Business Bureau office in Worcester, Massachusetts, talking a little bit about how con artists cheat the public out of their money. Ron Perbuta for Monitor, now back to Radio Central.
So, my friend, think before you buy. And remember, there are people who still think there's a sucker born every minute. A new song here by Margaret Whiting. It keeps right on a-hurtin'.
Yes, it keeps right on a-hurtin' since you're gone.
I cry myself to sleep each night, I could hold you tight. Life seems so empty since you went away. The pillow where you lay your head now holds my lonely tears instead. And it keeps right on hurting since you're gone. And I can't help it, I don't think
Country Western success for Maggie.
Margaret Whiting.
At 13 minutes before the hour, you're on the Monitor Beacon.
Manny Kellum's orchestra and chorus on Monitor with Love is Blue. One moment, Jim Simpson reports on shamateurism. Monitor Sports is brought to you by your Lincoln Mercury dealer, home of better idea cars from the makers of Lincoln Continental.
This year, when we introduced our all-new Mercury Montego, we told ourselves, this Mercury's got it. And we sincerely believed our new Montego was the equal of any other luxury intermediate. We were wrong. For in our eagerness not to be outdone, we made our Montego two-door hardtop, for example, about half a foot more car than its three leading rivals, with 4 inches more riding comfort in the wheelbase, 20% more usable trunk space, and more rear seat legroom. But that isn't all. We built our new Montego with the fine car touch, inspired by Lincoln Continental. With 2.5 inches of thick foam padding in the seats, rich wood grain vinyl finish on the dash, deep wall-to-wall carpeting. Luxury the others charge extra for. Mercury Montego's got it, the fine car touch, and at no extra cost. So instead of making our new Mercury Montego just as good as the competition, we wound up making it much more. Son of a gun.
This is Jim Simpson speaking for Monitor Sports. Almost 16 years ago, I sat in a small arena in Helsinki, Finland, and watched Floyd Patterson win Olympic gold medal and Ingemar Johansson backpedal from the late Ed Sanders to win disqualification in the heavyweight finals. During the excitement, my Finnish interpreter came up with a question which at the time seemed ludicrous, as I suppose it did to most Americans at that time. Why isn't, he asked, why isn't Rocky Marciano a member of your Olympic boxing team? I gave him in return a big sympathetic smile and the explanation that Marciano was a professional by American standards and thus not eligible to compete in the Olympic Games. We discussed the differences in philosophy for a few minutes and then let it go at that. That same night, the Americans won their first gold medals in Olympic boxing in 20 years, and their points gave the United States a last-minute victory over the Soviet Union in the unofficial Olympic team standings. That year was Russia's first in the Olympics, and they did lose, but they have not since. Several days ago, in a weekly supplement of a Sunday newspaper, there was an article that suggested as a possibility that we take our best athletes, professional or amateur, and allow them to represent this country. That way, said the author, this country would never take a backseat to the Russians, and let us remind you that the Olympic Games, not designed to be of political value, are of definite political propaganda value to the country that takes away the unofficial team title. The Soviet Union has been winning since 1956 and doesn't intend to lose any time soon and knows exactly what to do with its athletic prestige in the world propaganda battle. The United States is one of the last bastions of righteousness when it comes to what comprises our amateur athletes and what makes a man a professional. What this country will do or should do with its amateur athletic program will not be answered in the immediate future. It is a question of how this country feels morally about its amateur athletic standards, more than a question of whether it is right for our athletes to compete against others who, by our code, are professionals. Some of this twilight zone of sports, called shamateurism by many, is being explored by the British, who would like to make their Wimbledon tennis tournament an open tournament. That is, allow professionals to play along with amateurs, something that has not been allowed in tennis before, although golf has had those compatible rules for years. But those who rule tennis and those who guide our Olympic standards are not the same people, and there is no move afoot to change our amateur standards for an Olympic team, even though, as I said, the question of why not was first put to me 16 years ago. It is likely that we will never change our Olympic amateur standards, despite the obvious disadvantages to our athletes. But add to all of this, if you can fathom it, that our National Collegiate Athletic Association and our Amateur Athletic Union are still engaged in a brawl to determine who is the guiding force for our amateur athletes. And now their threats to ban some of our athletes from Olympic competition should they choose one authority over the other. It's incredible the handicaps under which our young men and women seeking sports perfection and the chance to represent their country must go through to make their modest dreams come true. This is Jim Simpson speaking for Monitor Sports.
Thanks, Jim. By the way, Jim Simpson and Kyle Rote will be in Jacksonville, Florida tomorrow afternoon to bring you the American Football League's All-Star Game on NBC. And now a word about Autolite.
Le Mans, France, June 1967. You're listening to the car that won, the Ford Mark IV, a $100,000 car with a battery that's almost a carbon copy of the one you buy for under $22. It's an Autolite battery. How come a low-price Autolite battery in a $100,000 car? Because there is no better battery for the job, not at any price. Get an Autolite battery for your car, whatever kind you drive.
You just like I should. Of course I have.
your name or someone's laugh that is the same. But I've forgotten you just like I should. What a guy, what a fool was I to think my breaking heart could get the moon. What's in store? Should I fall once more? No, it's best that I stick to my tune. I get along without you very well, of course I do. Except perhaps in spring, but I should never think of spring, for that would surely break my heart in two.
That was Karen Chandler and I Get Along Without You Very Well, an old song with a new beat. A word here about your education campaign. Today, to get a good job, you need a complete education. So if you're in school, stay there. If you're out, find out how to get valuable training outside the classroom by visiting the youth counselor at your local state employment service. Or visit a youth opportunity center set up in many cities to help you. Remember, to get a good job, get a good education. NBC News on the Hour is next, and then I'll be back with more of Monitor. I'm your host, Ted Steele.
To the latest news now, it's on the air. Keep tuned for sports and views now from